Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the I Get Buggets podcast. My name is Simon. I'm your host as always, and we are dipping back into podcast land, probably the last one before draft night, when we're going to relaunch and do everything again for season 2027. But we've come to an end point, at least by the actual basketball being played, with the finals finishing up. So I still have four teams to go, and the idea is that let's just get this shit done, get it all through. Off the top, so I haven't prepared anything. I think for the other teams, like minor notes and stuff and categories. This time we're just going to go through. I want to get all four teams done and hopefully spend not too much time on each. But it's important, I think, for me, and if anyone is interested in hearing kind of that finality to the podcast series and a review of all the teams and how they went this season, we can kind of bring that to a close and get ready to move on, because I'm ready to move on. Not from a handing the fantasy championship over, but in terms of getting basketball back and draft. And it's so funny how things move so quickly. It's like we've just kind of done or crowned the Knicks as champions, and you let them sit and enjoy it for a little bit. But it's no like, okay, there's rumors about Darren Peterson not wanting to work out with anyone other than the Wizards or the draft, and then there's free agency, and it probably moves a little bit too quickly. I'm kind of happy as a Nets supporter to move on from the Knicks kind of celebration as much, but all credit when credit's due. They obviously came together. There's all the podcasts doing all the reasons why. They just felt like this machine at the end. I never felt in these close games that the Spurs were going to win. It became inevitable towards the end, and I had hope. I really thought, you know, even down kind of whether it was 2-0 and 2-1, I was like, oh, well, you know, we've seen enough from the Spurs. They're getting these big leads, but it was just this inevitable wave. And obviously Brunson in that game 5 had as good as a game as you can, and it just felt whether it's kind of the crafty moves to get into the basket or the big shots, they just never felt like missing. And I think there's a conversation around it's about foul baiting, flopping, but that's an extension of not just him. There's the SGA, and I think, you know, it's the way you maximize kind of your talent. You know, if he's 6 foot tall, and being able to do all this stuff, it's just incredibly impressive. And I think if anything, it kind of gives hope to let's build culture, let's make risky moves, let's do things. We don't have to build through the draft always. You know, the East was ripe, and you know, when you get your chance, you can go for it. Like, I think there's a lot of things that are quite nice out of the win and the way that the Knicks kind of came through. And it was one of the best, you know, finals to watch from a viewing perspective, even though the results weren't going the way I was hoping, wearing my, you know, Vassell jersey, and that we only got 5. But I mean, it's as entertaining as, you know, I can remember with some of them, even though we got the Indiana Pacers and OKC was only a year ago, and we got 7 of those. It felt every bit as entertaining, but as I said, it's like, okay, let's move forward. We'll have the videos of OG being stoned and Mikal Bridges streaming drunk live, and you know, New York is tearing their city apart. But yeah, we'll finish off. Maybe we've got 4 teams left. We've got Jake and MJ and Chris, and then the last one we have is Princey. So 4 teams left. I did kind of the 2 teams that were didn't have a good season. I did the 2 teams that were really, really good but kind of didn't get over the line and fell. And then obviously I did Dobes myself, who finished the final. So these are the 4 teams that kind of finished in the middle, a lot of stuff. So we'll go through and finish it all up. But I think because we're talking Knicks, we can kind of start with Jake's. So there'll be things that I'll forget and stuff, but we'll go through the draft and look at his team where he finished. So, I mean, he went 8-10, 8 wins and 10 losses. So, you know, not good enough to kind of finish for the finals there. You know, he beat me in round 1, and I remember going, oh yeah, like, you know, the team would be interesting. And the year before that, I think he won like 3 or 4 of, you know, on a trot. He was really kind of a key figure, and then fell apart, but still I think maybe tumbled into finals. But this one, not so much. He kind of, even though I think he won a couple to start with again, he really fell off pretty quickly and was unable to kind of get back in there. And it was a bit hard because we had, you know, Adam and Dan especially, just kind of like winning. So, you know, it really became a bit of a dogfight in the middle to get those. And, you know, we know what happened with Dobes kind of just rampaging home to kind of get that last spot in the playoffs. And the victim and kind of fallout from that was kind of Jake not getting there. So I remember we'll look at, I think it's the landings, because the standings in the end, because I think Dobes finished on the percentage to go through. With Jake finishing eighth overall, but, you know, he's only one win out of the playoffs there, because had a bunch of teams just finished 9-9. So, you know, him 8-10 kind of just being outside of it there, looking in. Not ideal, but not really a catastrophic season. Like, it was about parity, really, with things. But, you know, we'll go through his draft and see where he went. I think being number four again was just such an easy. He did have a decision. I should say that it was the Luka all kind of Shea, and he went Shea. And I said at the time I had Luka higher on my board. Just think the ceiling was higher potentially. You know, that's correct. But what we did see was Shea again just being this consistent, amazing fantasy player. Finishes third in total points behind Luka, and fifth in the average. But I just think, you know, from week to week, you know, Luka misses time. Just that consistency, you know, obviously he's got his 20-point streak going. I just think it's an absolute, like, no-lose situation. Going Shea here, yeah, sometimes he's not putting up the kind of 50s that some of the others are. But I think just kind of to round out the start, it's just an easy, obviously he wins the MVP again. There's nothing to say, I think, about any of really the top. We'll talk about Giannis, I think, with MJ in a second, because that's the only one of the top five that, you know, probably wasn't an ideal pick, mostly obviously during because of the injury thing. But, you know, Shea's healthy, he gets through. It was a no-brainer there for Jake and starts off. The James Harden one, I think, was one that I was like, I'm not sure of going next. But this was a year removed, I think, from him getting drafted like 30. Or maybe even, I think Jake did it again, like last year, if I'm not incorrect, or Chris. But I remember hating the pick and then him just like averaging 30 and being really good. And like, ah, fuck, like James Harden's just going to James Harden and get his stats. It doesn't seem to matter where he is. Obviously, he gets traded throughout the season for Cleveland. But I think, like, again, it's just like, it just Harden would harden, and it kind of went through. An average of 28.3, you know, puts him up really that it's not really that much of an issue for him there. I do think it's a little bit early, and there's guys that have kind of potentially passed him a little bit. But, yeah, I think he's about 16, 17 in kind of average, and you've taken him at 17 here. So it's really kind of found fine. There's no real problem with that one. And again, he was relatively healthy compared to a few of the other things. I think he missed games here and then. But as much as I don't like James Harden, it's fine here. That's not really. I'd be interesting to see where he goes next season with it all, because I just think, again, we feel like Pays are just going to surpass him. But you know, it was the year before he led the league in assists, I think, and here his assists were still, you know, at 8 a game. So you know, the fact that you kind of tack on all the other counting stats and the scoring, it's just always going to be healthy. It's interesting. I want to see the shooting percentages, how it kind of goes, because just some of the obviously the games in the playoffs, and you know that James Harden playoffs is a different kind of scenario, but it all just kind of felt a little bit messy. So you know, that's where you come off maybe these James Harden playoffs and go, I don't know. And then you roll into draft and people maybe get a little bit of a buy, because you're like, well, it's just regular season Harden that I need for fantasy. And I think he's a contract year next year, which goes two ways, really. He threatens out. He you know, chucks out his toys. But he usually gets his way and, like, plays good fantasy basketball. So we'll see where that one goes. LeBron James next. He's just kind of doubled down a little bit with the age. And obviously LeBron had a season that was a bit up and down with health kind of wise. But, you know, he lands his 28.3 average. The thing was, this coming in this year was like, well, when's this LeBron kind of fall off going to happen? And it doesn't have to be like off a cliff. It's just, well, you know, LeBron James is not a first rounder anymore. So he slipped in the second round, but everyone was getting value from him. The year before, he averaged like a 32, 33 and was like, oh, hang on a second. Like, that's late first round kind of value. So where do we kind of buffer in this like reduction? You know, Luka's there. Austin Reeves is there. It was all interesting, and I think people were a bit scared of him. So I think at the time I was like, I really like this pick as an early round three guy. You're getting LeBron James, you're getting the King. It's fine in the end, like 28.3. He still scores 1,700 points. You know, that's more than a lot of the guys that are kind of around. But to be honest, like, it'd be interesting if you could have gone somewhere different with a few different guys still on the board. Like, I'm just thinking who's kind of still there. So, I mean, a Bam Adebayo, Jalen Brunson gets picked like, you know, four picks later, and there's Donovan Mitchell there as well. So there's other places I think he could have gone, and going into next year, I think, you know, the guys I just said are obviously all getting picked above LeBron, but, you know, when he's fit and he's playing, and he's just an automatic kind of statistic. So I think it was a fine pick, but it's not as risky as maybe we've seen a few of the other coaches kind of go to really try to swing and get a team that's pumping on more cylinders. Because LeBron James, I think, was always going to be week to week an interesting one. But it's really hard. I think at the time it was probably not too bad value. LaMelo Ball was a really fun one. A bit of a bounce back year for him. I think, you know, at the start of the season, remember a podcast throwing like, what can Charlotte do to kind of get off him and all the money? And he's kind of really vaulted himself back. In terms of fantasy, it didn't all happen at once. Like, he averages a 23.7 in the end. So, you know, that's outside of top 50 value when you look at it like that. So it's, for you to draft him at 37 here, it's a bit high. It'd be funny where it goes, because I don't see a world where he, like, I mean, he probably goes higher than 37 next year. Like, just because I think the idea of like, oh, LaMelo's back, look what Charlotte did. They had that run. It kind of started off slow. So I'd be a little bit cautious of kind of going all the way there, because it did fail when Charlotte was winning. It was like a less is more with him in terms of like his usage rate, some of the outside shooting attempts going really down, the minutes going down too. It'd be fine, because I think he's a better player so than 23.7, but how much better are you willing to kind of risk on it? And he had a healthy season, but, you know, it hasn't been too far removed from the injury and stuff. So, I mean, I would bet on him. I'd be happy to. But in terms of what we've just seen with Jake's team, he's probably a little bit of a reach there at 37. And I think at the time, I might have said, like, I was happy for someone to go with him in the top, like, first four rounds. I think I had him around this kind of mark. I'm like, here's where you probably are very interested in going for him. But I'm more of a, this is the right time. If he slips, I'm going to be stoked about it. But if you go here, I'll let someone else take the risk. And Jake took the risk. And I think as much as we have this perception of LaMelo Ball and the Hornets getting the Hornets kind of having this season as like an elevation fantasy-wise, it didn't come to the mark of some of the other guys that were picked around him a little bit. So, yeah, we'll go through next pick. Jared Allen did really well with the Jared Allen one. A 24.5 is like, yeah, it's like roundabout kind of where he's gone here. So that's 50th in the average, like bang on. And you've got him at 44. But I think, you know, he was healthy. He really did some stuff. I think that's fine. I think this is a good pick here. I think at the time I thought maybe it was a bit of a reach, but I think it's paid off. He had some big weeks as well on the back end. I think potentially if... what was I going to say? I can't remember if Mobley or there was some injuries and stuff, but he had those games where, you know, he had a 60 maybe in the last couple of weeks or something like that. He had this like one where he just kind of popped off, and he had a run, I think, of a couple of weeks where he was insane. So based on his average there, I'm reckoning, you know, maybe there was a couple of weeks where he's a bit on the lower end as well, but I'm quite happy with that here. The Darius Garland one's more interesting. You know, he's an average of 20.6. Obviously, he gets traded in the Harden one to the Clippers. Fantasy-wise, he had some big games at the Clippers, but also it was a bit like, I feel like it was funny because his ceiling elevated, but his kind of floor felt a little bit. But I think he was kind of stuck in Cleveland around some of the other fantasy assets. And obviously, Cleveland felt like they were ready to kind of try to upgrade that position. So he's been a really weird fantasy one because I think he was underrated and now he went kind of a little bit overrated. I think the year before he kind of struggled to, obviously he had these injuries and stuff, but he's gone from a buy low to a sell high a couple of times around it. And I think, you know, he lands in an average of a 20.6. You know, that's a lot further down, closer to your, you know, 100 in terms of average than your 50. 20.6. Yeah, so he's about 91 on his average. So to get him at a 57 here is a reach, and it kind of it hurts you 100%. You know, especially when guys have gone after in the picks are your Kawhi Leonard and then Denny Avdia are two of the next three picks. And, you know, those guys are top 20 players. 32 average from Kawhi, and what did Denny average again? A 29.5. So, you know, they're in Kawhi's are kind of, that's pushing probably top 10, I think. And Denny was like at least that kind of that 15 guys that have gone in the next picks. And those two, and unsurprising, like it pays off at two of the teams who were in the grand final. So these are the ones that you want to kind of nail. And probably missed a trick with the Darius Garland one, I think. Zach LaVine as well, as a hard own. I just don't know where you kind of place him now. He's averaging 18.3. You know, that's 115, 120 on your average or whatever. You've gone him at 64. I think gone are the days of Zach LaVine kind of fantasy. And I do kind of sympathize because the year before, I think Jesse drafted him and he was quietly good. I think he might have averaged like a 23, 24. I'd have to kind of bring up the stats on him. So he's had a real kind of fallout year. The Sacramento Kings were a bit of a mess. I remember lauding, and I think maybe DeMar DeRozan's coming up in one of these reviews, but I remember early days going, oh, wow, you know, like, once again, DeMar DeRozan being like a low-key kind of nice ad, and he just kind of fell apart. Obviously, the Kings were kind of, they were posturing a little bit towards the end, but, you know, there's this huge chunk of the season where they just sucked. Keegan Murray was out. There was a lot of kind of Sabonis was just out. You're like, oh, well, Zach LaVine should be kind of just get your points, man. Just do what you do for forever. It's just like that good stat, bad team kind of shit. And it just didn't really come together. So I think I'm probably said at the time, fine pick. This is kind of the area you go if you kind of want to go that direction. But it ends up really kind of burning you here, pick 64 that turns into, you know, your 120 best average. Who remembers how many games he played? Probably missed a few. Julius Randle, home run for this one. I remember being annoyed that it didn't get him. Average of 26.1. So that puts him right in the top 50. He's about 41 on the average here, and you've taken him at 77. Awesome pick. He's done this a few times, Julius Randle, where he's just kind of like, oh, what is he? I talked about the roller coaster with Darius Garland. Very different kind of player, but we have had those kind of ups and downs, and I feel like Julius Randle has done it during the season where Garland's gone season to season. Julius, I remember being like an average of 27 and then kind of falling apart throughout the season. This way, I think he kind of dipped maybe a little bit, but from memory, he was pretty consistent and strong throughout. I think he probably started high, but I remember it just being a really kind of a good pick, and he's holding on to his average at 26.1 for the whole season. So absolutely nailed that one. Probably his best pick through it. OG Anunoby, obviously, he would have loved the Nick Homer and him kind of coming through. What a game, what a tip, what a block. coming into draft, I remember Anunoby and Mikal Bridges being like, I think there's value there, the way we kind of saw the end of the playoffs. So I was really interested in kind of grabbing them. You've gone at pick 84 here, and he's averaged a 21. So that's roundabout kind of right in the end. So this one, it doesn't kind of... I was maybe expecting a little bit more from him. You know, he takes 12 shots a game, shoots basically 50%. But it's kind of... The defense is there. But, you know, the counting stats, 2 assists, 5 rebounds... It's not enough for him to really go up if he's not doing a lot of, like, more scoring. But, you know, it kind of fills the box score enough that he does. And I remember he goes through patches where he slips out of games a little bit. But, you know, a fair kind of roll of the dice here. Just a safe kind of add, I think, given what the Knicks were doing. And, you know, the high runner minutes that they were playing some of the guys, he fit in really well. And was fine, picky. Went one after Jordan Poole, so much better add with that one. Getting into the back end now, Cameron Johnson, I got the idea of it, but it just was a really hard one to swallow. Ends up on the waiver wire. Regrettable pick there. Kyle Kuzma, regrettable pick. I think he's... There's a little bit more blame on that one. The Cameron Johnson one, I was interested, you know, new kind of city. He's filling this Michael Porter Jr. role, and they thought it was an upgrade. They gave a pick to the Nets to kind of facilitate it all, to play that position and kind of spread the floor, and it just didn't happen. The Kyle Kuzma thing, I think you got to take a little bit more blame, Jake, on that one. I know he's been... had these seasons, but I think the writing was on the wall with the Milwaukee. So I think, unsurprisingly, a shit pick, which just ends up on the waiver wire there. Mitchell Robinson, I could see the idea. I don't know how many times Jake's drafted him, but I feel like it's more than one, and I feel like it's around this same time, like, you know, at that 110, 120 mark with this expectation of, you know, offensive rebounds are just going to lead everything. To be honest, he averages 17. It's not like a catastrophic event. Let's see. You know, he hangs on his roster all season. It's hard with a guy who doesn't average 20 minutes. You know, he averages 19.6 for the season. It's the fact that he averages 17, you know, based on basically his rebounding is a lot. It's just, yeah, I feel like he's a... I don't know if you're what we're expecting at this point for Mitchell Robert. It kind of is who he is. He goes Drew Holiday next. Oh, this was isn't the second of his just home run kind of picks. It was hard because of the injury. Like, it was a question mark on how long he was going to miss, and weeks turned into, I think, a couple of months at some point. But to start off, he was hot. I remember he was, like, averaging 24, 25. His average slips all the way down to 20 towards the end. There was a real debate about, you know, Drew and Scoot, and, you know, Denny was a part of it at least a little bit, and Sharp, and, you know, these guys who's kind of more of the wing, who's kind of the point guard, and Drew Holiday was the guy to start. Scoot was out, but I think he was their guy regardless, and really kind of came through. He was a good pick, ended up with an average that probably didn't demonstrate how meaningful he was early. So it was unfortunate because I think injury derailed it quite a bit. But it was a savvy pick because I don't know if I had him as in my top 150 to draft. So I think taking him here and him being that good was smart. PJ Washington next. Yeah, I mean, whatever. I think he lasted in his season, averaging 19.5. So that's a fine. That's pretty good to add him here. I'll pay that. And Al Horford next, I think, was a miss. I think he stayed on his season, which his roster for the whole season, which I'm looking now. He dropped him and then re-picked him up. So at least I was going to say, shame on you, Jake, if you kept Al Horford for the whole season at an average of 14.4. But you drafted him on October 18th. You dropped him on October 23rd. So he did not last long before games are really being played, or I think because we drafted basically just before the season, maybe a couple games, saw immediately it wasn't going to work or he was injured, and didn't add him again until late February. So I guess you get a pass there, but not the best pick to end out. But overall, I think he looks, he's ended Grimes and Christie off the waiver. I think the team maybe probably a little bit unlucky with some of the stuff, but not other than Shea. Julius Randle was this guy that kind of like came through, and LeBron was fine, James Harden was fine, but there's not one of these guys that are just elevating what you've seen on a couple of other people's rosters. So LaMelo Ball was the one that you've been hoping for, and it kind of doesn't come through. So he's done fine. I think his best pick was Julius Randle. His worst pick, what did I say before? Kyle Kuzma for sure. There goes Shea. We're going to have to pick up the pace. Who should we go next? We'll go, because I mentioned it, with MJ's team next, because he's got Giannis here as his pick. A real decision, I think, for Giannis at two. I think I ended up having him three on my board after to Luka, so I don't blame him at all. The injury, and I might have talked about in the review about, whether it's a little bit of this, well, will they, won't they kind of trade him scenario, and how does that kind of forecast across the season? I think I landed pretty firmly in that I don't think it matters. Giannis is just going to go out there and dominate, and there's few players in the world, Wemby included, that have kind of the counting stats ceiling as him. So I was very happy to kind of lock in Giannis. I think I spoke a little bit about that Luka decision, but I think it's more just the unfortunateness of the injury and this whole talk about your top five being so kind of locked in advantage. But it gets completely wiped away when he plays. He only scores 1,300 points for the season. So, you're well below guys on his roster like a Peyton Pritchard, who scored more than him, a Matis Bezelis, who scored more than him. Jeremiah Fears scores 13 less than him across the course of the season, and that's because of the injury. Obviously, when he was there, he was devastating. MJ's team, and should have led with this kind of finishing with that kind of in the playoffs, 9-9, I think it was, to get in, but then Dobes being on that rampage, just kind of getting rid of him. And I know, I think from memory, MJ was in a probably pretty good form going through as well. I think he finished the season really well. I remember at the time going, Adam and I were both coming off a couple of losses, but some of the other teams not having the best form, and the fact that MJ and Dobes were in pretty good kind of nick going into finals, it was going to be interesting who kind of came through with that one. And then obviously Dobes did, but I think it did come together, and the fact that MJ's team was able to kind of weather some of the storm to get through was big. And I think, Giannis getting back and healthy towards then helped a little bit. But I mean, I think he missed games as well in there. And obviously there was the whole thing with Bucks wanting to tank. So maybe he wasn't back in the end. He got back from his injury and then he hurt. It was just a missed season and a huge kind of hole in his roster. So it's a rough pick at two, but it's not one that we can, I think, hang him for. I think Durant was another one that was really interesting, and he's been picked in the back end of round two for two, maybe 3 years in a row, and delivered every time. He was huge, on that Suns run for me. He was massive. He finished like top five in minutes played, which is bonkers. And I mean, I don't have all the kind of the analytics, what they're going to say, the exercise science, but the fact that he averaged 36.4 minutes and then broke down just as they needed him for the playoffs, seems somewhat correlated. From a fantasy aspect, you're, licking your lips if he can stay healthy. And he did throughout the season. So, a Durant finishing with an average of 29.3, firmly in like kind of, that top echelon of averages here, which we'll get up again. So he's just outside the 20. I think it's 22. But, there's guys there like Anthony Davis and even like Giannis and Joel Embiid, who we'll talk about in a sec, who've got high averages in, but he just kind of, he played so much. Let's get the total up because that's probably more interesting for him. Yeah, okay, he's sixth in total points scored for the season. So absolute kind of nailed it for Durant. We all know it's just, it'd be interesting because I don't see him, you know, even though he's sixth highest scored, like I don't see him as a top 10 player next season. I see him getting drafted around the same. And then it's going to go, you know, when he's on the court, he's just kind of like dominant. But, you know, are you going to bank on his health again if he's playing this minutes in his age? So a really interesting one that he was happy to take and it paid off in big way for him. And the other one that was just an absolute masterstroke was the Tyrese Maxey one. I think it was value. I remember saying I regret not taking him at the 10th or the 11th spot. I think he's firmly, he's like a top 10 guy next year. I don't see how you don't take him that high. He's eighth on average this season with a 31.9. He had that injury kind of late, but that was still enough for him to finish eighth in total points. I think he's the guy. I think we've just seen everything that you can't be more impressed. I think he absolutely nailed it. And he was a big, big reason of some of these wins, I think, early in the season for MJ and kind of coming through at the end. He was just absolutely instrumental for him. I can't say enough about a pick like Tyrese Maxey early in the third round when he ends up being a top first round player in both points and average. So big, big, big win. Next, we have the Lubin. Ivaka Zubac. I remember raving about this pick. I thought it was absolutely a steal for him to fall this far. The fact that, you know, I think he was a borderline second round. Like, I think he finished in the top 10 on total points scored last season. And there was a little bit of concern about, you know, just him rolling out and being consistent because, you know, it was his first kind of year of having these points and how much was role and, you know, playing next to Harden and doing a lot of that stuff. So he'd averaged 27, I think it was, for the season previous. Really felt good for me. And I think I had him ranked at around that 20 mark, maybe 22, 23. So the fact that he'd come all the way back and he was available at 39, I was sure as shit going to take him at my pick next, but MJ got in first. Fine-ish in the end, maybe kind of dodged a bullet a little bit, mostly because he's traded and then kind of just shelved with the Pacers all well into the tank job. The really kind of two-pronged thing was that they when they traded him and had that protection on the pick, that just meant that they needed to kind of get as much odds to go top four, you know, really motivated them not to pick. So it ends up being just kind of this hole and this waste. He averages 23.9, which is, you know, five down from, or at least four down on what he kind of was the season before. So it takes a bit of a dip. Interested to see where he goes last year, but I thought it was smart drafting at the time. That just kind of didn't go his way. Joel Embiid, I had a huge problem at the time with. I remember just thinking, this is way too early. A pick 42 for a guy that, you know, how many games does he play? I mean, we'll have to get a basketball reference on that. He misses a lot, but he kind of plays his way into interesting relevance again. You know, it'd be interesting on kind of MJ's opinion on how often he was able to kind of give these scores, because we just talked about what his average was in the end, and he landed, you know, with a top 10 average, right on the kisser for that, as 10th with a 31.3. So how much of a debilitating is it for a guy who is never going to have like four game weeks? He's always going to have the three, because it just seems like, they're not going to play him the weight of minutes throughout a week. He missed the start of the season. You're like, well, here we go again. But gradually builds into a point where he doesn't really have this injury that like just knocked him out for a couple of months. He had a couple of ones where it's like, oh, he's missing a couple, which stretched into like a week, and then I think one that stretched into two. And at the end of the season, you know, he missed before kind of really coming back and trying in playoffs. But I just, he continually is a hard one for own. And I think obviously the points are so high that someone's going to get into it again. But I feel like it's just it's a hard one to do when you've got guys around him that are going to score more in terms of a total season. So Joel Embiid, he finishes with roughly 1,200 points. You know, that's the same as Ivaka Zubac, who just got shelved for the season. You know, Isaiah Collier is only like 100 behind him. CJ McCollum's got more than him. Where you mentioned Jeremiah Fears got more than him. Tobias Harris is knocking on the door a little bit less than Joel Embiid, but only by about 50. You know, these are, it's just, I just find it a risk and a pain in your side that is, it's avoidable at a point at round five that I wouldn't want to kind of deal with. So I think it's a hard one to evaluate. I'm a stay away at this point until it's much more of a value pick, unless you really kind of banking on him. And I think this season felt as healthy as it might be. Like I just don't. It's hard to see from a week where an opening is like, well, I don't think he can jump off 2 feet. To, oh, hang on, this is looking really good. Like I think it had a real arc that was positive for his ownership, and for him to still fall so short in total points and be a pain in terms of rotating through the IR. Interested if it's kind of worth the kind of pick here, given the amount of talent still on the board. But yeah, he's going to be a question mark moving forward. The Walker Kessler one next is more of a just, that sucks. He was the first one really early in the season just to get shut down, and now we're hearing all about his contract negotiations and how much money he wants, which is a really interesting one given, you know, he's played like 40-something percent of the games. Some of that's been, you know, resting in tank, but last season just couldn't play. What needs to be said is the fact that he averaged 28.2 for the handful of games that he played. So he was looking like an absolute home run pick. Very, very small sample size. I'd be shocked if it trended the same for 28.2, but very, very promising season that just got smashed into smithereens with the injury early. So that's a real rough one. And, you know, the fact that in his first six picks, he's got, you know, Giannis that missed a whole bunch, Kessler who missed the whole season, Zubac who missed the whole second half, and the whole Embiid scenario. You know, that's four out of his first six picks that just really missed a lot of games. So the fact that I think he ended up with what he did is a pretty good testament to what he did. Maybe the rest of the drafts were released in free agency. So, let's look at how he kind of filtered out. I should have stopped one pick later because Jimmy Butler was the next one. So it beggars belief, actually, that he's done so well to kind of get into playoffs, because Jimmy Butler obviously, you know, does his ACL. Or was it Achilles? One of the two. I can't even remember. And he's out for the season. He was an interesting pick around seven to begin with. 26.9 is healthy. Like you take that every day of the week. That's actually very good for a pick at 62. And it just, yeah. I mean, I'm not the biggest Jimmy Butler fan in terms of some of the fantasy stuff. You know, I was absolutely in on him on early Chicago days. It's just, yeah. I mean, unless you want to draft him in the last round next year, again, he's just going to miss so much. And this was add him to the pile of people that have been hurt for him. Mikal, we go next. Sorry. Next pick, he goes Peyton Pritchard. A big, big win for him, I think. He averages a 20.5. You're picking with 79. Maybe it's a little bit early, but I said before, he kind of played a lot in the season, was pretty reliable for him. So I think given all the stuff around this pick, I think he would take that again if he had the chance. And Kevin Porter Jr., Another one that was up and down, but the 25.7 stands out as like a real, real kind of vaulter. You know, 25.7 puts him clearly in the top 50 average for someone that you've picked at 82. So let's go to average and see where he landed. 45. So, you know, above the likes of a Trey Murphy, just behind a Keontae George and a Julius Randle in average. So that was the people he kind of was up against. A funny one only because, you know, he was injured a little bit. Then when he kind of came back, I remember, you know, Doc Rivers not really playing him in the starting five, but then having a couple injuries and he kind of got back into his usage role, especially with Giannis out. He's just a bucket getter. All the problems with Kevin Porter Jr. are not his statistical fantasy upside. That's not the problem. So I think he gambles on him. I know he's known him from Cleveland days, and it kind of pays off in that way. So, again, misses games and stuff, but kind of nails that one. Matis Bozelis, a pick that, again, I wanted. Just didn't get to me. Yeah, trending okay in the end. Again, wasn't a consistent season, an all breakout season that I think a lot of people were hoping for. Averages 20.3, gets taken at 99. So that's round about where he kind of ends up average wise, but does play healthy, consistent one that, yeah, again, a player pick that he'd take again. But the breakout wasn't kind of where some of the sleeper stuff were projecting him. He kind of just fell into the role. I think late in the season was more interesting. So depending on what Chicago do in the offseason and what they look like, I think more next season maybe is interesting again. But he has him here. Derek Lively is his next pick, which is, again, a complete zero for him. An interesting look there. I think it was around about the time he should have been picked. So, again, we just don't know. All the way back, he takes DeJounte Murray, which ends up, you know, being okay. It's funny. It's the fact that he was able to hold on him so much with all of his injuries around him. He's probably done good. When he came back, he was an average of 22.8. So it's just, you know, weighing up whether you think it was worth it. But I think the fact that from here on in, a lot of people are just kind of swinging and missing, it's not the worst there. Kyle Filipowski ends up being a championship player on my team. I had him around this mark, I think, to draft as an interesting player. He's so reliant on what his role is and his minutes. And it only was kind of later in the season where, you know, they traded for Jaren Jackson Jr., but then shut him down. Larry Markkinen's not playing, and then he gets the opportunity. So I didn't mind the risk at the time. Didn't pay off, was too hard to keep. And it wasn't until only really late where he became valuable again. So hard one to kind of analyze there, but probably a miss. Cam Wetmore being a miss as well. I understood where he's going with that one. And then Dennis Schroeder. D'Angelo Russell was the last one, a miss. There, I think what he did do really well was more of his free agency ads. So Nickeil Alexander-Walker was an absolute home run, was very, very, very good. First in the absence of Trae Young, but then even when he came back, enough so that they're like, well, let's trade Jae Young. We're very happy to kind of hand a lot of this usage stuff over to Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He takes CJ McCollum and in a weird kind of way then gets traded to join Atlanta. So he has both of kind of these dual guard guys there that he's picked up on free agency. But both of them are very healthy for him. CJ, a guy that I drafted. So we get the reverse of the Filipowski one that I drop and then probably in a mistake because he ends up averaging 19.9, CJ McCollum. I remember going just like, watching the Wizards, and I had three Wizards at the time, and I was huge on Keyshawn George. The Bilal thing I found really interesting because he's catching, you know, a lot of the box score and just kind of filling it up. And CJ just had a few of these games where he was like benched, and he was just it didn't feel sustainable in some of like what they were doing for him, and they'll move past him, and eventually they did trade him. So you know, it was right that he was, but I didn't. I was at a point where, like, oh, I don't know if I see it enough for him to be a valuable, and if he gets traded, if he's an off-the-bench guy. But no, he just, he rebuilt his value a little bit first, and then when he got traded, he kind of landed in this perfect role where they needed him so bad, and absolutely kind of nailed that one. So huge for him there, and I think Jeremiah Fears was handy. Precious Achiuwa at the end was good. You know, he's added Tobias Harris, which was fine too. I think he kind of patched it together to be really a very worthy to kind of get to the end and be in such good form. So he did really well to kind of patch over the injuries, and I'm sure that he's looking forward to a bit of a fresh look at next season and getting in some guys that aren't injured as much. So go through, keep going, keep plowing through the teams. We've got up next Princey's Rock'em Siakam Robots. Fantastic name. Kudos to Princey there. Got stuck with the worst position probably at pick six with the hardest one to take. And remember, you know, saying it at the time, saying in the review, said it a whole bunch of times of like really not knowing who to go there. From memory, I was had in my rankings a real kind of toss-up between Cat and Cade Cunningham here. And he's elected to kind of go Anthony Davis. Didn't hate it. And it was in the ethos of when I drafted him for the Lakers and you know, won my first when the run of three and was like, well, there's not many other players who, when healthy, can have the ceiling that makes them similar to this other top five. Like, whether it's your Cat or Sabonis or your Cade, like, they're not going like a 34, which is what Anthony Davis can do when he's healthy. I thought the Dallas thing was really interesting, and I kind of bought into him being there and kind of proving the Luka thing wrong. But things with the Cooper Flagg thing, I think, shifted. He gets hurt, he gets traded, he gets shelved. It's a real complete like train wreck of a kind of hole, given that all these other teams have, you know, these number one guys that they're relying on. Jesse's the only guy out of these other top five who takes someone in Sabonis who just doesn't really kind of play that much or enough for the season. So, you know, you're so much behind the eight ball immediately. The fact that he sucked me in to turning him into an Evan Mobley, he's kind of steered out of the skid a little bit. But, his season was like, okay, he finishes 9 wins, 9 losses, but it's that horrific loss to Walshy when I remember doing the posts and saying, well, I don't see an avenue for Dobes because I've just marked in this win for Princey, which makes him uncatchable for Dobes. But the fact that he dropped that game and then opened it and had this poor percentage, it just kind of all went hairy at the end. And Evan Mobley did his best, I think, towards that to keep him up. But through kind of a draft review, the Anthony Davis thing couldn't have gone worse, really. Knowing, you know, your hands were tied, like, oh shit, do I go a Cat or a Cunningham or you know, Şengün, who's gone 7, who are all super, super reliable, and it's just a bit of a swing and a miss. And you kind of needed to bank in that a little bit. I had Anthony Davis about 10. I think I had him like, well, if I get pick 10 and I can go in and get him next to someone else at that caliber, then let's fine, let's ride it out. But I think to go with him at 6 was a big risk at the time that didn't pay off. But I kind of got sucked into the upside, and I was a bit down on Evan Mobley at the time, which I think he's recovered some of his value, Evan Mobley, whether it's playoffs or the last few weeks of the season. So he's an interesting one. But goes him at 6. Next adds as Siakam, the inspiration for Rock'em Siakam Robots. Yeah, a 27.2. It's probably the one you go with. The Pacers thing was interesting. He played most of the games from memory. Fine with that. Doesn't kind of blow you away, but really it's if you're kind of coupling your Anthony Davis with some safe, it's probably the one to go. You know, he goes after a Trae Young, before a Devin Booker, and he's better than both. Let's see what Paolo ended up with, 28. So, you know, Paolo was the one that I, you know, said multiple times that I would have gone. But it ends up being a not too dissimilar kind of in the wash. Vucevic is the one that hurts him a lot. He's probably not hugely off the mark at the start of the season because he's coming off, you know, three seasons in a row, I think, of like health. And that was an underrated thing when you're drafting sometimes. Here is a guy that's just, you know, he's going to give you 70 plus games unless something like catastrophic happens. But he falls away so dramatically. He averages a 22.6 to end. Obviously, the things... He's just like not in the rotation in some of the games at the end for Boston. Have no idea where he goes next season, but it's not at pick 26. I can tell you that much. This one's a huge kind of hole in him. He gets drafted one before a Bam Adebayo, two before a Jalen Brunson, which is not for good reading. In defense, he was instrumental to kind of all the teams that kept picking him in this like round three, round four hole. But I think he's made the same mistake maybe with the Anthony Davis thing of like maybe just expecting it's going to happen again and leaning on that safety and looking maybe at the average too much of what he did. But I don't think it's too much of a misstep knowing it's just hard to see what was going to happen moving forward, and the trade was just, you know, catastrophic for him because just at the Bulls, he was just kind of in a lot of stuff. So it's a hard one to come back from. De'Aaron Fox, he was injured at the start of the season. Interesting to kind of where he goes because I think through Fantasy Prism, a pick of 35 was value for someone on what he did the season before. But we kind of saw it, and I know that the finals and the playoffs leaves an after taste in your mouth, but long stretches of these fantasy games where he's just like middling kind of an 18 to 21 kind of fantasy guy, which is not what you want. You know, lands an average of 22.9. Again, you know, you pick him at 35. That's well into kind of like the 75 kind of range in your average. You know, Scotty Pons gets picked one after. It's just a hard one to swallow. But yeah, he's round three and four really here. Of Vooch into Fox really hurt him. DeMar DeRozan, I mentioned him earlier in the draft review. Someone who I think was like, oh well, he's been underrated. He's kind of paying back the faith again. But slowly the season came on and you just kind of lost faith in him. Sacramento lost faith in him. His counting stats went down. Lands on an average of 21.3, which, yeah, you know, like your 80 mark for someone who gets picked at around 46. So he just really kind of fell through the floor. And there's just no really player here in the first five rounds that takes this kind of leap. It's just kind of a mare or a four. And he doubles down on Tyler Hero next. I think drafting him 2 years in a row. The year before kind of taking him, I think, round eight-ish, maybe even later, and just like vaulted into, you know, top 50 value, if not more, with an average of like 25, 26, I think. His average slips to 23. He was a bit of an afterthought a lot of the time. Obviously, he had some consistency games, but again, it's one that doesn't stand out as kind of really that sexy or that like impactful for a guy that you took at 55. So he's another one that I reckon might be hard to place next year because we know how good he can be. But it'll be interesting the way that Miami kind of shake out their roster. But again, it's like a trend for Princey this season, unfortunately. Brandon Ingram, I thought, was a really good ad. Obviously, I think with an average of 24, he's the first one that kind of takes a bit of a leap. And it's strange to say that of Ingram because he's kind of later in his career at the moment. We can know what he can do. But I think that was a real, you know, malaise and forgetful because he missed basically half of the season the year before. And you're like, well, Toronto have upped him. But they've got a lot of these kind of guys already who are going to demand a little bit of a fantasy input. Obviously, your Scotty Barnes and your RJ Barrett's to a lesser degree. Ingram kind of was the guy, but it felt like, oh no, he's the kind of the scorer guy. They're going to go to him. He feels very comfortable. He likes to take all the shots, you know. he was really one that stood out for him. He's probably best pick here at 66, average of 24. So he did really well. He did couple him with RJ Barrett there, who was pretty good as well. You know, coming off a season before, which was probably his breakout fantasy-wise in terms of there's a lot of Toronto injuries. He's like, yeah, I can do this. I can play that role if you need me to. Takes a little bit of a back seat. But, you know, still an average of 22.3, which makes his fine. I'm happy at RJ Barrett here at pick 76, you know, or 75 really is one that you do again. But, you know, Andrew Wiggins next is one that hurts. Consistent's enough. I probably forget that he was actually not too bad in terms of his consistency. I'm checking. Yep, stayed on his roster. You know, finished with 1,350 points. You know, more than an RJ Barrett in the end. More than a few guys that he's got. So yeah, okay. I walk that back a little bit. Andrew Wiggins is probably fine at 86. I don't love the fact that we've taken, you know, a swing on a guy that's just gonna, you know, stick around and give you just enough. But I mean, he goes before Christian Brown, who was a nothing, and Anthony Simons, who was a nothing, John Collins, who was, you know, really hard to be anything. So that's probably a fine one. I'm happy with that there in the end. I think Nick Claxton was very good for him. I was a bit down on Nick Claxton, just seeing what Brooklyn was going to do. You know, I think his average does slip a bit. It's funny, his average is not too much better than Andrew Wiggins, to be fair, but it just felt like he was impactful on games, and he was happy to take a pretty calculated safe risk, I think, adding him here. And I remember just anecdotally talking to Princey and him being pretty fond of how Claxton was playing, especially in some of the wins he got. Aaron Gordon next, missed a bunch of time, but again, like, this is value for a guy who, you know, is going to score as well as he did. I think he had a 50-point game in the first week or some shit. He's fine. He just misses games. Tobias Harris, I mean, he gets dropped. He ends up on MJ's roster because we just talked about it. Goes around the league a little bit. Drops him, you know, after only a month. Probably recovers a little bit. But the fact that, you know, you drop him after only a little bit means that it's a missed opportunity early enough, you know, in round 12 when you still got, you know, three picks to go. Wendell Carter Jr. and being really solid for him. Averages 19, sticks around all season, you know, gets more points than a Nick Claxton, scores more points than a few guys. But he's done all right there. And last off, DeAndre Hunter was a miss. Keegan Murray was a miss. He was hurt, which was kind of a bit shit. But yeah, I think he was interesting with some of the trades. Bringing in Anthony Edwards for Ingram plus, can't remember what it was I think a fun risk to kind of raise his ceiling a little bit with that one. I think it might have hurt in the end, if I'm remembering correctly, just with how that kind of Walshy week panned out. But Anthony Black adding him was a really, really good free agency pick. Ends up averaging 18.6. Obviously, a little bit ups and downs, depending on some of the injuries and stuff for Washington. But yeah, he's kind of got Carter Jr. and Anthony Black and a reason to celebrate the Magic a little bit there. But yeah, a bit of a missed opportunity, I think, again this season, because first season he's missed finals for in the three that he's been back in the league. And I think he'll be hunting for it again next year. And he's going to have to do a little bit more hard work in the draft. I think he was probably playing from behind because, again, he didn't have those guys that just leapt out and made that kind of progress. And you just need one or a couple of them to settle in with nailing your first picks. And that's kind of where he hasn't done either. So he's patched together a pretty competitive team and done pretty well with it all. So in a similar vein to MJ, MJ obviously had a little bit of those kind of bigger injuries. But I think, yeah, Princey was playing from behind with a couple of the picks that didn't pay out early days. But yeah, it happens to everyone. Looking forward to next season, I'm sure. And then we can finally get this season's reviews over with, and saving the best for last, as always, antsy over a pair of Thompsons. Always one of the funnest ones to look at the draft review. Didn't get there. The other team that finished kind of 9-9 and miss, with Dobes leapfrogging them. Heartbreak kind of at the end. After, you know, being very well documented the amount of times that Chris has been in playoffs and then made the grand final, you know, as early as the 2025 season doing so. So always kind of seems to be up around this. So this is a down season for him, but I think he really gave it a bigger shake as possible. We have to start with the Amen Thompson pick at 9. I hated it at the time. I didn't think it was like a way off, but it was just someone that I think that, you know, you could have and should have been happy with taking at pick 12 if he was there. Even if you kind of, you know, rated him. To be honest, I reckon I'm in his shoes, probably would have taken Sabonis. So he's dodged that bullet in hindsight. Amen Thompson really came through at the back end of the season. He averages 27.5 to end with. That was really a 23-24 for a long stretch in the season. So he's come home hard. I think he was smart in terms of holding on to him. I think he was getting offers for him from a few people. I don't hate the fact that he's looked at Amen Thompson and he's figured out, you know, this is a guy where I feel like all the fantasy stuff's going to come together, especially if they kind of lean on, you know, advancing his offense a little bit. The Fred VanVleet thing's happening. There's all this kind of thing. Well, Amen's going to have to do a little bit more. I don't hate the thinking. I bumped him all the way, I think, up to like 18 on my board. On the wake of everything, feeling really kind of good about some of the stuff. It's just, and I say that for a few, and Chris nails is more than he misses on these risky ones. But it really kind of puts you in a box of like, well, I need this to go well, because I'm passing up, you know, on some other guys. And he does get another bite at the cherry at 12, but you need, you know, and there's discussions about just the way at the moment the draft is that it's so much better to get a 1 to a 3 and then add a, you know, 18, 19, 20, because, you know, just reflecting on this draft, you know, there's a Jokic and a Mobley, a Durant and a Giannis, a Paolo and a Wembanyama. Those duos compared to an Amen Thompson and an Anthony Edwards, a Sabonis and a Karl Anthony Towns, a Jalen Brown and a Cade Cunningham. Like, there is that bit of a difference. I mean, I think Adam obviously did really well with kind of his Cade and Jalen pairing, but, you know, there's a stark drop-off in talent in the first round, and then maybe not as much of a drop-off in talent from, you know, the start of round two to the end of round two. You know, you can compare an Anthony Edwards to a Durant, really, in what they had the output of in the end, very clearly. So I think while, you know, I like Amen, I really liked Anthony Edwards there. You know, I don't think he finishes as a top, you know, 10 player, but yeah, he's 13 here, I think it is. So, but yeah, like that was the right pick there. So I was very happy with Edwards, and the Amen one, it trended up. Like, I get all of it. It was just, it needed to be kind of a 30 for it to pay off. And I had similar concerns with Şengün, who, again, is a Houston Rocket, who went in the first round. So, you know, you got two Houston Rockets who aren't Durant going the first round, and Durant end up, you know, being the better of the players, at least in total scores, a little bit behind Şengün in average, but, you know, kind of coming through. So it was a hard one to really, but, you know, if you were going to have a risk going in the first round, I'd rather you do it at 9 than at 7 or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's one that is easy to critique, but I would never want to curb the risk play of Chris and drafting guys that you feel like you're going up. Because the more you go through this exercise and kind of looking at a Princey and potentially an MJ and teams who kind of ended up in that middle, we see seasons where just taking the guys at the right time at what kind of do it. But at least And I think that was a little bit for Dan's side in Dan Wydak. He took the right guys at the right times. But I think in terms of Domes and myself, it was taking a little risk on guys that kind of vaulted up. And so it's a hard kind of tightrope to navigate. But what I was saying, I think Chris has got like some of that backing with the risks that pay off. And Armand Thompson wasn't too far off, and it's an easy critique because it just stands out. But we'll go through the rest of his team. Obviously, he's got his big weight on. Steph Curry next. I think I was happy with that at the time. Like, I think that this is where he goes now, you know, a late round three kind of guy, because, you know, he has the consistent weeks, and his floor is so high because his scoring is just inevitable. Misses some time, you know, he's out. He's a bit hurt with some of the stuff. Finishes quite low in total points, unfortunately, you know, 1,158 in the end. So, you know, a guy like Miles Turner scores more than him. And Moussa Diabate scores more than him in points. But, you know, the average of 26.9, yeah, it's a little bit down. You know, guys like Donovan Mitchell, even Cooper Flagg, who goes after, his average is very similar. We're just getting to that point in the age where, you know, Steph Curry and LeBron, who both get drafted in round three here, you're like, oh, okay, next year is it round four, really? It feels like it's an inevitable trend, but someone I was happy for him to add. And I know on the big weeks he was amazing for him. It's just kind of that availability. The next one is the one that hurts. It's Ja Morant. And I remember at the time there was a bit of buzz around the room and like, yeah, you know, what he's dropped, like, good risk, let's go. We know what the ceiling was. He was a first round pick 3 seasons ago. I was a bit more hesitant about it. I wasn't going to think that, you know, he's going to be out for the wrist injury and everything. The coach stuff, you can kind of, like, that doesn't shock you. But the way it kind of panned out to, is he this kind of zero asset around the league now? Is he in the league in, like, 2 years' time? Like, they're real questions at the moment that are shocking and not the questions that we had on the draft night for him to get picked at 32. But, you know, this is the reality of where we've gone, 7 months down the track. And then through the lens of the fantasy, unfortunately for Chris, it's just a big hole and a miss for him and a zero at round four. And, you know, you got Zion Williamson, who was interesting because, you know, comparing them, they're both, you know, pick one and two in the draft, have both had real troubles for, you know, different reasons potentially, but, you know, missed a lot of games, haven't lived up to that kind of hype of what they were. Getting drafted, you know, back-to-back in a reverse order, I guess, from their draft night here in fantasy, and one in Zion, really kind of putting it together a lot more and having a bit of a bounce-back season to Morant, who's an absolute, you know, zero for it. So a missed one for him there, and he has to have this big break. The Porzingis one I didn't love at the time, and I think I said that it ends up being really one that hurts him. You know, he trades him in the end. He gets traded, you know, to Golden State. It was just a real roller coaster one. You know, his availability isn't there. I know the average was pointing high from the season previous, I think, and one that I think people felt they could kind of maybe buy low on, and I'm not sure what the buy low is here, but it just, at pick, you know, 49, it wasn't that. But absolutely nailed the Austin Reeves one. Huge, huge pick next at pick 52. He averages a 27, you know, that's firmly, you know, a top kind of 20 average guy. A little bit less maybe. Hang on, where are we? Yeah, about a 30 in the end, actually. 34 there. But, you know, like, this is, he averages 0.2 less than Jalen Brunson, like a little bit less than Armand Thompson, who we just talked about. Like, he's in these categories of guys that you've got at pick 52. The injury hurts. You know, you end up, he trades him away because he was missing about a month, I think, and, you know, gets back Klingon and someone else from memory. He was good. But really nailed this pick. Yeah, like the Austin Reeves one, he's not going this. We'll see. I'm assuming the Lakers find a way to keep him and just pay him the bag. But interesting one to watch. If he gets his own team kind of vibes, I'd be thinking maybe even more dangerous. 27 feels high for Austin Reeves, but you watch the way he plays, and you know, getting to the rim is a huge part of his game, and we see that from, yeah, you like some Bronx and SGA and Harden going back, Trae Young. You know, there's this group of guards that it's a huge part of your fantasy, and you want him to do it, and I think he's going to be big for it. So he nailed that pick. Mark Williams, I remember, you know, talking in the review about Mark Williams and Porzingis together, about two guys that I don't know if I want to pick in this early, given the fact that I've just baked in, you know, a healthy season of 60 games. And you can look up Basketball Reference on what they made, but I'm betting they didn't make 60 either. So a hard one, I think, to own across the course of the year, and would have been really good in spurts. But we know Mark Williams is ceiling. The problem is he averages a 20.3. So I think in Chris's mind, he's like, all right, I get the risk it to get the biscuit. This is my whole mantra. But when he plays, you know, we've seen he's a 25, 26 kind of average guy. But that didn't happen. They've got a few centers at Phoenix, and I don't know who's the one that's their guy. But, like, Mark Williams, who started the season going, yeah, you know, he's the guy. I don't know where he is right now. Asar Thompson. So he's gone both to the Thompsons, obviously, as he's antsy over a pair of them. I had him pretty high too. I think like 72. I think I had him like maybe even a little bit higher than this. It's going to be interesting because I think it was super important to them. You know, they're shouting out how good his defense is. It's just the offense is rough. And that doesn't mean he can't be really valuable. And 18.8 makes him okay here. It's definitely not a waste of a pick, but someone who probably didn't take, you know, the high end of the foresight, which Chris and I was probably aligned on, saying, oh, I think he can, you know, push that to like 22 easy if it happens with kind of the flow of everything, and he gets out and he's averaging, you know, two steals a game and stuff like that. So I get it. I get the pick. I kind of like it still, but the breakout doesn't really happen to the lengths of what you want. Absolutely nails the Alexar pick. Really, really, really handy pick. He finished an average of 23.6, but was better than that. The trade is something that we can litigate. I think he missed out on the trade, and he said it. But Alexar is just kind of not really a part of things late for Dobes, unfortunately. So, and Norm, there was a couple. Conkernipple's the one that he we'll get to him in a sec. But he nails his absolute pick. The fact that he was in a position, I think, to potentially trade to get a Jalen Williams in it, which is the key, is a testament to how well he drafted. Like, as much as I think the trade in the end wasn't great for him, it's because he's drafted really well to kind of turn those guys into a Jalen Williams, who, like, I think the logic is sound for it. I think you maybe do it again if you think you're selling high in Conkernipple. The problem was that Con just kept going and was so good and consistent. But, you know, he's really done well in a round 9 here, pick 89, to take Alexar and him to be really good, and to turn him into something at least. But, you know, Paul George next. Before he got suspended, he was fine. Like, I mean, I wasn't in love with it all, but a pick 10 seemed like a relatively okay risk there. And we saw, you know, what he did. Again, another championship player for me off the free agency. The suspension just kind of killed it. And he was getting into some form. You know, he took a couple of weeks for some of it, but I think that was fine in the end. Draymond Green, I mean, it was a little bit early for me. Definitely early in the end, gets dropped by December. So that's a bit of a miss for him. Tamani Kamara, I liked this pick. Obviously gets dropped, lands with the average of 17. I liked where he was thinking from here. Portland, just they have a lot of bodies, and his scoring is just kind of not there. And
I think some of the efficiency stuff kind of dropped off from the season before. But interesting player. Zach Edey, he nailed. Like, he was really, really good when he came back. He's averaging a 24.8, just got injured. Real sliding doors moment, I think, because he was building some momentum at the time. So that's one that hurts. And we just said Conker Nipple, like 21.4 average for a guy you pick at 138. So 132, sorry. So yeah, that one was just a 100% strike rate, awesome pick. And Tari Eason was interesting at the end. I mean, I ended up owning him for a little bit, just a frustrating own. So, you know, the very second last pick of the draft, I'm not going to hose it or anything. So I think he's done all right with that one there. But yeah, the trades were a big thing for him. You know, Donovan Kling was really good. He brought in like a Derek Queen, which probably kind of fell out from him a little bit. But a Musa Diabate, who he picked up, dropped for suspension and picked him up again. Did really well with that one. I think we all kind of see some of the smart things that he's done. I think adding someone like a Vassal and he got a Dante DiVincenzo, who was, you know, before his Achilles, was really, really handy for him. Yeah. I just think, again, the four teams were the teams that finished in the middle. So you could see where they've gone right. You just see where things haven't aligned for them. Whether it was injury kind of derailing or missed opportunities or just a couple of picks in the middle rounds, you're like, oh, they didn't really kind of hit to the way that, you know, you were hoping, or other kind of teams got lucky with some guys to kind of vault them. So, yeah, you can see, you know, the four teams, two of them, one really kind of scraping into finals and yeah, the other three kind of missing out. You can kind of see where it is. So, yeah, I think it's nice to kind of put it all together there. A little bit more riffy than usual in terms of format. I don't think I picked the best and the worst player for all the teams. But that's okay. You would have gotten it out of my... what I said to kind of pick all that stuff up. But yeah, I guess I can hang my hat on 120 minutes. I had 2 hours of time that I thought we were going to have a game 6-4. So that's where I've squeezed it in. It's been hard to get time sometimes. And now I need to quickly finish off a few things, but happy to kind of put a bow on this on Wednesday, the 17th of June, knowing we have 4 months or so, July, August, September, October. Yeah. Round about 4 months until draft. There will be, now that we've finished, and it's early, but it's not in terms of, I'll start kind of talking about what we're going to do for draft night. So, cause we have a couple of options, there, and the earlier we do it, the better it's going to be in terms of people's availability, as well as, getting potentially a house or somewhere to go stay in draft. So thank you everyone for those who listened and got all through it all. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll keep the banter in the chat going with through free agency, and we'll get to the other end and have another great draft night to look forward to 2027, where everyone, someone needs to knock me off. Let's do it. Thanks, everyone. Love you all. Bye-bye.